Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today's cast, we continue our coverage of the Blood Ravens because, again, Dawn of War 4 is coming and we're really hoping it doesn't suck. All right. So,
positive 40K, vibes, baby.
Oh, 40K Lorecast, weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please continue to comment, like, subscribe, everything you guys do for it. It really does help us out a lot. It's pushed us out all over the globe, and it's been really fun to get all these comments and notes from people everywhere. In addition, we have lots of links in our show notes. Not a lot, but just a few. One link is to our YouTube channel for our bi-monthly Q&As and some other shows we have going on there. We also have a link to our other show, The History of 40K. We can listen to Brad and I talk about the history of Warhammer 40K played in the tabletop and how it is just consistently broken. And we really shouldn't complain about rules because it's always busted.
Sometimes more busted than others. Yeah. Sometimes more fun than others.
Yep. You can also find me over on Retro Recall talking about old video games that, again, I like way more than I should. But you know what? Turns out F-Zero doesn't suck. If you like the show and you want to support it, there's links to our merchandise. Spoiler alert, it actually is all very soft and comfortable.
It's actually legit X stuff. Yeah. I wear it.
Oh, I put effort in. Yeah, I put effort into our merchandise to make sure that we did not get the hot garbage that usually comes out.
We did have a long talk about this because the first time I got some of our merchandise, I went, "Hey, man, how much did this cost us?" And you went, "Don't worry about it."
Yeah, it's fine. Well, our margin is not high, but it's okay because at least people don't get our article of clothing and throw it immediately in the garbage. You're going, "Well, never wearing that again." So go team. Also, if you want to support the show and help us continue in our expansion out, Patreon. Massive thank you to everyone who's already contributed to our Patreon. It is helping fund a lot of like our side projects that are coming out, like History of 40K, some of the stuff we're doing on YouTube that's coming out, etc. For those who want to support us, it's $4.99 a month. That gets you this show and the History of 40K completely ad-free. Or 13.49 East Caribbean Dole for our chocolate lovers. Because did you know that Grenada is one of the world's major cocoa producers and has some incredible delicacies around it? Also, as a scuba diver, Grenada has an underwater sculpture garden by Jason Decares, whatever. And really fun history, in the 1970s, Grenada was the site for the first ever all-inclusive resort.
I have actually dove there, by the way. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I can't believe, do you sink like a stone or float like a log?
Oh, I sink like a stone.
I think straight down. Yeah, just straight down. Yeah.
It is. There is a tired Brad. I don't need ballast. I just go down.
There he goes. Oh, that's probably not ideal. The last link in our show notes is to our Discord. Please join our Discord if you haven't already. We're pushing to 12,000 members right now. We've done a lot of reorganizing there, so it's really easy to kind of get around. A lot of people come in there to ask Brad and I questions, but more importantly, a lot of people come in there just to hang out, talk to each other about lore, memes, literature recommendations, gaming recommendations, painting competitions, everything. It's really, we're trying to build this thing up, and we've done a decent job so far as a wonderful community spot for Warhammer 40K that's, you know, inclusive for members. So if you haven't joined, come on in. Super fun spot. But with that, let's talk really briefly about where all of John's free time went. Dawn of War Soulstorm. All right. Ironically, the Blood Ravens are barely in this game, it turns out. I mean, they're in it, but from a lore standpoint, I guess it doesn't matter. I have over 800 hours into this game. So
luxury, child's play.
Right. Brad and I were discussing this before the show. Brad's proud of himself because, Brad, how many hours do you have into Civilization?
6,000 hours.
Okay. And before we started the cast, what did you discover about Civilization?
I had it running for an entire day and I didn't realize it was still on right now.
There we go. So it doesn't really count, does it? Brad has gone on vacation out of the country and left his Civilization running. So good God.
I feel I still won this argument.
Fine. All right, but just real quick, because I do want to cover Soulstorm. The canon story of this is Boreal and all five companies in Soulstorm were lost. I don't know who won the story of Soulstorm, but it was not the Blood Ravens. But so moving on from them rapidly. There's not a real date on this, but at some point the Blood Ravens established a home world on the world of Aurelia in the Aurelian subsect.
I actually got real bummed. If somebody could find this, I went pretty hardcore in this because I wanted to know, and it is in the darkness.
Yeah.
They out of nowhere have a home world.
Yeah, they just have a home world, and it's Aurelia. So M40, a giant warp storm, comes into the subsystem, and it's so potent that it actually moved Aurelia out of orbit of its sun, setting the planet into an ice age and like killing off most of its population.
It's pretty crazy though, because they actually succeeded. This is one of my favorites, in the fact that they succeeded in doing all the things that they needed to do. The great unclean one, Ulcair, came out and they had these epic battles. And there was the chapter master, am I losing my mind? The chief librarian, it seals him in. And then the homeworld's still consumed by the warp.
You missed a step. So the Blood Ravens evacuate most of the population, and then two people stay behind. The Blood Ravens chapter master and
chief librarian.
That's the same person. And his second in command, his librarian, Kyrus. His protege.
Stay
behind. So the chapter master.
Moriah and Kyrus are both there.
They both stay in there. Moriah dies fighting Ulcair. And then Kyrus takes advantage of the wounds done to Ulcair by Moriah to seal Ulcair inside of Aurelia, which then gets banished into the warp.
Yeah.
Forever.
You're or like, for we now. Won. Oh, our planet's gone.
Yeah.
By the way,
all the other planets in the Aurelian subsector were totally fine.
Screw you guys. That is kind of messed up. You're like, they also, like, this was a pretty epic looking battle. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so that just happens. And so the Blood Ravens now become a fleet-based chapter. Because they had enough time, by the way, to take their fortress off of Aurelia and put it onto one of the spaceships.
Okay, I'm going to be John for this one. You usually complain about stuff like this.
It's not possible.
Did they have, like, was it the Ewok logging operation? How?
Well, I'm assuming
talking about how they had a hard time getting the population off, but they deconstructed their fortress monastery.
Oh, I can explain that really simply. The Blood Ravens are kind of shitty. So they had a bunch of ships they could get people off the planet for and use those ships to get the monastery off the planet over the period of, like, I don't know, a month and a half, while the warp storm just kept coming right at the planet. And at the end, we're like, oh, hey, we got the Fortress Monastery off. Should we get some of the people off the planet now? Yeah, I guess we can.
How do you deconstruct it that fast? Was it made from IKEA? Like, how do they, like, pulling it apart?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They bring up the Allen wrench set. We're just undoing it quickly.
That's my issue with that. I was just like, we took the Fortress Monastery and added to the fleet. And I was like, how? Like,
yeah. So the Blood Ravens now decide to become this fleet-based chapter that kind of controls a subsector that just becomes a de facto recruiting worlds. But anyway, now M41 comes. The Blood Ravens have returned back to this sector after the Korova campaign we covered last time. That's the one where they defeated the Necrons and a bunch of everybody, including the Tau. And they took a lot of losses there. So their idea was, we're going to come back and we're going to replenish the chapter back in our home world, and everything's going to be fine and dandy.
Yeah. And it's GW running, so it didn't. And then the orcs took offense to that and showed up.
It is classic GW running too, because they basically get back. They take like one boot off, like they sit in the comfy chair, get one boot off, and immediately the alarm goes off. Fine. So yeah, the orcs are attacking on the desert planet of Calderas. And again, this always drives me nuts that every planet in the GW, and I guess Star Wars 2, is one thing. Yeah, forest moon of Endor. How do these places not have polar caps? Like Tatooine.
Hey, Hoth is a cap.
It's just a desert.
It just continues on.
It's a solid, everything is one thing. How? How do I mean, I know we have people in our Discord who are going to explain this to me, and I'm honestly just preparing myself to be wrong, but I don't see how that makes sense. Go ahead. I'm ready for it. The comments are beginning. All right. Anyway,
I mean, basically most other planets just don't have seasons, but continue.
Apparently, fine. So Calderas is under attack by the orcs, which is not uncommon in the galaxy, by the way. The orcs are just jumping on space hulks and YOLO swagging all over the place. It's just the way it is. So the Blood Ravens deploy and Captain Davian Thule to the planet to drive them away. Quick aside, for some weird reason that drove me angry to the end of the Earth, this is Dawn of War 2, and it wasn't an RTS game anymore. I don't know why, but it just wasn't. And that sucked. It wasn't even like a turn-based game. It was just a different style of game. It was still fun, but I was really mad. And I'm not over it. There we go.
I was just saying, I love the fact that I'm so old now that I only want turn-based. I'm like, this is happening too fast. What's going on, kids?
I just love RTS games, and they took away an RTS game from me. Well, it's more action-paced. Cover's better. I don't care. I want to build a base. But all right. Anyway,
let's give props on this, though, because Thule's kind of a badass.
Oh, yeah. The story's great. So Thule rescues Blood Ravens and drives back the orcs, and then they're attacked again. But what happens is they notice the orcs are attacking with a lot more like precision and strategy than orcs should, because they do find the orc leader. It's Mech Bad Zappa. He's not a Gaz. So what's going on later? And they figure it out pretty quickly because they notice some Eldar. Like, oh, there it is. And later, though, they come up upon the orcs fighting the Eldar because the Eldar, and this bit's weird.
You have to give, you're not going to give this props enough, John. There's no way that we're not doing the Steve Buscemi with an Eldar going, hello, fellow orcs.
Yeah, but this whole thing's weird because in the game, apparently the Eldar were disguising themselves as orcs. And Mech Bad Zappa, because he's a cybernetic eye, is able to see it and goes, well, that's actually an Eldar, not an orc. But here's the thing. I like Eldar a lot. I like Eldar lore. I'm not aware the Eldar could do this.
They got powers, bro. Psychic powers, otherwise known as magic.
Right, and orcs are also psychic beings.
I want everybody to know that I definitely did magic hand gestures when I just said that.
The orcs are psychic beings. Like, it wouldn't work. Anyway, it just, that annoyed
but
me.
But it did. It works like Sex Panther.
It didn't work. 60%
of everything works every time.
Mech Bad Zappa saw it and went like, nope. So anyway, the Blood Ravens see this and then attack both of them, because of course they do. And as they do it, the warlock leading the Eldar dies and looks at the Blood Ravens and goes, there's a greater threat than them on the planet, which is blah, 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 foreshadow.
Blah, 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 foreshadow.
Because this part's hilarious. Because all right, we talked about it in the last cast. I'm going to do it again now. In the last cast, Brad, we opened with, and I talked a bunch of shit on this. The Blood Ravens are supposed to be this chapter that's very heavily psychically gifted. They love foresight. They're precogs. They do tons of research into it. They are masters of understanding their enemies and the movements of their enemies. And in this situation, they just went, shut up, nerd, and stabbed the Farseer and moved on with their day to go kill the orcs. Didn't even investigate one little bit of this. And it just went, nope.
I do have to say, this part of the game, while kind of cool in the way the things you have to accomplish, is pretty, really, no one saw that coming. Because we have all of the harmful stuff that was all the plants beginning to attack everything. And the astropast get a shadow in the warp. You're like, hey, man, what causes that? Who knows? Maybe probably Tyranids. It's definitely Tyranids.
Yeah.
And they finally kill Bad Zappa. And they're like, woohoo, we've won. This is obviously
and immediately you get overrun by Tyranids.
Yeah, instantly.
It's a cool mission, if I'm being honest. It's a fun mission because you get overrun. And like, if you try to hold out, you can't. Give them credit. It actually is very similar to Titus and Space Marine 2 when you're playing it, because they're just the endless hordes of Termagants that keep coming at you.
By the way, those missions frustrate the shit out of me because I refuse to lose all that stuff, so I will take hours and hours and hours keep trying to win the unwinnable mission.
Congratulations.
I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Just want to really solidify that.
We're aware. We're aware. It's cast 126, Brad.
You guys have figured it out.
Yeah, that Rubik's Cube got solved. So.
Because you had to turn one side.
Click. Oh, look, got to the end of it. Anyway. But they do that. Luckily for the Blood Ravens there, they're able to flee before getting completely walloped by the Tyranids. And they send a note out, and Captain Angelos from the very first series is able to get word from the Astropaths before the Shadow Lord comes in. And he says, hey, I'm on my way. Just hold out.
You know, in a side to the story, game-wise and story-wise, I felt that this was, where do you rank this in this feels like Tyranids, you know?
It was great. Was the Tyranids in Dawn of War 2 are one of the better plays? I mean, Space Marine 2 is the best Tyranids, candidly. Yeah. It was extremely well done. But this really does capture Tyranids well.
I like this horde quite. I just like the feel of just the endless horde.
Well, that would throughout the whole game, even like when you encounter lictors in this game, I will say, all right, I'm going to call it out right now. There's some... We'll go with homages from Space Marine 2 into Dawn of War 2. And I'm going to tell you, there are a lot more than homages, in my opinion, because let's talk about what they have to do next. So the Blood Ravens are left with a problem. The problem is Captain Angelos is coming, but they have to buy themselves time. So they have to do a few things. They have to create a poison that will work against the Tyranids. They have to find a way to mass produce it. They have to gain control of the Astronomicon to send a message out. Huh. That doesn't sound familiar, like something I've done recently in games. Anyway. I've literally done this more recently. Huh.
I'm gonna throw my boys under the bus because the Eldar were not being nice.
Well, the Eldar shifted. The Eldar are funny. So as you play through the game, you're doing these things. So you make the poison, then you mass produce the poison. You actually end up making a dreadnought thanks to the poison, which is kind of cool. You get the Astronomicon. You're sending all the notes out. Everything's kind of working in your favor. But the Eldar just keep attacking. You're like, why are you attacking us? There are Tyranids here. Basically, stop being a dick. And they discover why. The reason why is because there's a craft world not too far away.
I love everything about this. They're like, Eldar, like, look, guys, we're seeing things and we're trying to move things in time so that it really makes a better outcome. And you're like, an outcome for everyone? They're like, yeah, sure. Or we're using this as Operation Human Shield and Orc Shield to stop the Tyranids from getting to their craft world. Then you realize, oh, you guys were just using us to get in the way so you could drive away? Hey. Well, so
the Tyranids had two plans. Plan number one was get the orcs involved, turn into a big enough fight, and basically what Inquisitor Crypman did out in the Octarius sector, where this will just become a perpetual motion machine, and it'll be a horrible problem later, but right now it's contained. But then the Blood Ravens killed the orcs. So that one went away. So they had to have an option B. And the Eldar had a fantastic option B. In the middle of the Aurelian sector is the capital Meridian. And the Eldar realized the Tyranids are going to want to eat Meridian because it's got lots of stuff on it, but it has lots of defenders on it. So if we get rid of the defenders, the Tyranid Hive Fleet will go right at Meridian. And then when it does that and it gets where it goes to Meridian, we'll just blow up Meridian.
By the way.
And kill the Hive Fleet.
Yeah, I was going to say.
32 billion
people. Yeah.
But you know how many craft worlds are on that planet? Zero. Dick move. But also, I should point out 100% something the Imperium would do.
Oh, yeah. This is plan like A.2
for the Imperium. Yeah. Imperium's like, kill the Hive Fleet. It's difficult. Blow up a world in the middle. There's people on it. Okay. No, that works. We've got lots of people. We've got people to spare. Go ahead. Blow it up. So anyway, the Blood Ravens are able to stop the Eldar, manufacture all the poisons, do all this stuff. And they are actually able to deploy the poison into the Tyranid fleet, which affects the Tyranids, but doesn't quite stop them all the way. And they still are getting overrun by the Tyranids who are affected by the poison. And cough, cough, Titus. Anyway. I don't understand how this was this close, but GW writing. So from defeat, from the jaws of defeat, comes snatching victory.
Victory from the jaws of defeat. Also, the Eldar do have to give the big middle finger of, we told you this was going to happen. You should have just let us use Operation Human Shield.
Well, anyway, but it works out, though, because Captain Angelos and the entire fourth company of Blood Ravens translate into the system. They teleport down to Typhon, where they're doing most of the fighting, and kill the Tyranids for the most part. So, yay, Blood Ravens.
That's it is kind of funny because it is very anticlimactic because you're like, we're going to get overrun. And we did everything we could and we won. You're like, yeah, what? Cool. Yeah, we just won. We pushed the button that said win.
We had more space marines. Turns out that's all we needed, just more space marines.
Who knew? I mean, yes, if you bring enough, you just always win.
Yeah, problem solved. So anyway, that brings us from there to Dawn of War 2, Chaos Rising. This was the DLC for Dawn of War 2. It released a year after the game came out, which is convenient because it's set 1 year after the events of the game. So way to go, writers. That was pretty good. But in order to do it, we have to go back in time, unfortunately. Kyrus, the librarian who banished Ulkhair to the Great Unclean One to Aurelia. Well, it turns out, like 500 years after the planet disappeared into the warp, he reappeared on a space Hulk named the Judgment of Carrion.
Also,
this story's epic.
Yes. Foreshadowing, the entire story is called The Fall of Kyrus. Right.
Hold on. Foreshadowing for this entire episode. Dark Angels fans, you're going to be upset. So anyway, also,
again, if you spend 500 years in the warp, just saying, I'm probably gonna put a few extra protocols on this guy before I just let him run wild amongst people.
So a space Hulk called the Judgment of Carrion translates into the Aurelian sector, and the Blood Ravens force goes aboard to see what's going on this thing. And it's a giant spaceship covered in rotten decay. You know, you could have just blown it up.
Judgment of Carrion, you know,
let's go wander around. And the ship is full of Tyranids and demons. That's what it's full of. And the Blood Ravens task force are fighting through. And while fighting through, they run into Kyrus, their former librarian, who's just hanging out in the ship. He does the whole, like, oh, thank the Emperor you're here. I was barely hanging on by a thread.
Just, by the way, I'm sorry, but at this point in time, you just shoot this guy. He's in the middle of all the corrupt stuff. And you go, like, no. I have so many questions about how you're still here. Yeah. Like, let's just admit the heresy and move on.
It's all right, let's call it what it is. Have you seen Event Horizon? Ta-da. That's who you walked in on.
As he's holding his eyes in his hand.
Yeah. It's like, what? So I don't know. Over the course of a few hours, days, it's not clear. The Blood Ravens find themselves trapped in the ship. They can't escape. It turns out the only way to end up getting out is Kyrus makes a deal with Ulkhair, the Great Unclean One that he banished. He's going to deliver fresh gene seed of the Blood Ravens to Ulkhair, which is a nice, like, Blood Ravens gene seed might have some value. But as part of the deal, Ulkhair then has a demon possess the apothecary who came along with him onto the ship. And then from there, it gets weirder. So up until that point, that's not weird enough. Let's make this weirder. So the Blood Ravens leave, the few who survive, which is basically Kyrus and this apothecary, leave. They get back to the rest of Blood Ravens who go, hey, we sent like 30 guys in there. Where are they? And Kyrus goes, oh yeah, they're dead. Cool.
Also, how are you alive?
Not a single person asked the question of, so you've been in the warp for 500 years. Kind of suspicious. Nope, not one. Kyrus ends up becoming the chapter master of the Blood Ravens. The apothecary.
Bad decisions.
Yeah. The apothecary who's possessed by a demon is now the honor guard for the chapter master in a chapter who's made up of librarians. Dude, it's all librarians, and there's a demon-infused apothecary wandering around going, no one seemed to notice this one.
Even in the cuts, this is so funny because they do not address this at all. He's just like, hello, fellow space marines. I am good. You're like, you're in charge now. And he goes, I knew it all along. It just, no.
So back to Dawn of War 2.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
February is full of flowers, candy, stuffed animals, and lots of talk of relationships and dating.
And no matter your situation, married, dating, single, or just choosing to focus on you, therapy can help you find a way to see more clearly. We're all still working to figure ourselves out, and sometimes it's really helpful to get some outside assistance to take the pressure off from trying to figure it out alone. I know for me, therapy's aided me through some challenging eras of my life. Being able to talk through what I'm feeling and where I'm struggling allowed me to better cope and help myself at making my life better for me and those around me. With BetterHelp, you can be matched with quality therapists with care and reliability. BetterHelp does the initial matching for you, helping you find the right therapist for your needs, while at the same time providing flexibility to change amongst their over 30,000 therapists at any time. BetterHelp is one of the largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with qualified therapists. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
So Dawn of War II, we're a year after the Tyranid fight. Subsector's still messed up. They're still cleaning up Tyranids. Because the problem with Tyranids is you kind of got to clean them up. They don't just like, we surrender, you know? So now the warp gets all riled up and Aureli pops back into real space. From the warp. Just saying again, from the warp. Now, the Blood Ravens see this, and as it emerges from the warp, they get a distress call from it. And their thought isn't, oh, that's obviously a trap. No,
it's a trap.
They go, oh, look, some of our brothers must still be there after 1,000 years. Let's go help. Now, they get there and they're immediately attacked by traitor guardsmen.
What?
Or just regular guardsmen who saw they were Blood Ravens and went, not taking that risk. Just saying. They've got a bit of a history. Little bit of a history. But
they've always been good to those guys.
Yeah. It was Chaos Guardsmen. The Blood Ravens then escape the attack from the traitor guardsmen and then get attacked by Eldar. Because of course they do. Because it turns out Aurelia also has ancient Eldar ruins on it. And the Eldar went there and wake up a bunch of Wraith Guards. We're not done yet. Because also orcs start attacking the planet Meridian. Because of course they do.
Let's give the game a little bit. You still have to make up a reason why all these factions are available to play. I mean, come on.
It's not an RTS. They're not. That's the problem. They're not really that available to play. It's a different style. It's fine. All right. But now back on Aurelia, that has been in the warp for 1,000 years, has a giant chaos temple on it.
I can't believe it.
By the way, is a surprise in the game. We've discovered a giant chaos temple there. Yeah, guys, it was implied. Like, it's been in the warp for 1,000 years. If there wasn't a giant chaos temple, then I'd have more questions. Just candidly. They attack the temple, and the Blood Ravens find themselves fighting demons that are being pulled into the materium by the temple. And so they do what any good space marine would do. They blow up the temple.
I like this quite a bit, though. Yeah, seriously, because the way that they do it is because the temple is actually a part of the planet itself. It's almost like the heart of the planet. And blowing it up actually starts to tear things asunder. And that makes sense for a planet that's been in the warp this long. You know, that temple itself is part of the planet. I just like this piece quite a bit.
Yeah, I like the next piece, because the next piece of this is actually becomes the choose-your-own-adventure element of this. So as the Blood Ravens flee Aurelia, they discover there's a traitor amongst them. They don't know which one. And here's the fun thing. It's because it's not canon which one it is. The game is designed, as you play the game, you make a number of choices as you play through the game. Depending on the level of corruption and the choices you make, it'll determine who in your retinue is the traitor. Kind of a cool little piece. It was fun. I didn't realize the first time I played through it. So it allows you to play the game through a few different times. But they discover that there's encrypted messages being sent around they can't decipher. They also, around this time, get a message from Kyrus. He sends his honor guard into the system with orders to disengage from the Black Legion. Because I should have mentioned it's the Black Legion that's been attacking them here. And all Blood Ravens are ordered to retreat and not engage the Black Legion. Which makes zero sense, by the way. Like, zero. Like, also, why would we?
Yes.
Yeah. And the protagonists all go, yeah, we're going to not do that. We'll tell you we're going to do it, but we're not going to do that. While trying to figure out what's really going on, they discover that this Space Hulk, the Judgment of Carrion, has been coming in and out of the system for hundreds of years, randomly. And when it does, there seems to be some transmissions going around. The Blood Ravens then discover that Judgment of Carrion has what's called a logic engine in it, which is a supercomputer, for lack of a better phrase. And if they can get access to this logic engine, they could actually crack the encoding that's being used by the Chaos and the traitors to figure out who the traitor is and what the messages are. So now it's their turn to go board the Judgment of Carrion. Now, Judgment of Carrion, they get in there. Still Tyranids running around, so go Tyranids. All
Space Hulks have Tyranids on board. Come on now.
It's fine. What's interesting, though, is they also, when they come in there, they start finding the remains of Blood Raven Marines. The important piece is that all the Blood Ravens have had their gene seed extracted and packed away, but never collected. And they can't figure out what's going on until they get to the big reveal. The big reveal is a data slate from the apothecary Galen. And Galen talks about how the expedition into the Judgment of Carrion has gone all wrong. Everyone is dead. The demon Ulcair is speaking into his head.
I was just about to say, one of the biggest things for it is part of the correspondence is he knows the demon Ulcair wants the gene seed, which no one knows about, and then he's packed it up and sealed it to keep it away from the demon. And everybody's kind of like, what?
Yeah, this is weird. But he also talks about how Kyrus is acting weird. Basically implying that Kyrus is corrupted. And they all assume Galen's dead, by the way. Because when we read this, he's basically saying, this is my last transmission. It's over. We're all going to die. So whatever. They eventually get the logic engine, which they then grab and does the thing it always does, which is it's going to decrypt the message, but it's going to take a while. So go do some other stuff. Go do these three other missions. And when you're done with those three missions, we'll tell you what it decrypts to. In effect, they leave the Judgment of Carrion because they're able to leave it, whatever. And they get a message for the Imperial Guard who are under attack on Meridian. And they decide to do the un-Blood Raven thing and help the Imperial Guard.
And also do what they were not told to do, or they were told exactly not to do, which is engage the Black Legion, which also didn't make any sense that they weren't supposed to engage. And they actually sack one of the big guys.
Yeah, not only do they save the Imperial Guard, but they actually kill one of the leaders of the Black Legion, only because that leader gets backstabbed by his number two. And effectively, his number two is supposed to teleport him away. He teleports in to talk a bunch of shit and then goes, all right, teleport me out. And the guy goes, you're breaking up. I can't hear you. And then he gets killed by the Blood Ravens. But now the logic engine kicks in and they discover a bunch of things. First off, that Galen is not dead and he's alive and part of the Honor Guard and is obviously corrupted. At the same time, this crazy order comes in, telling them all Blood Ravens are ordered to abandon Subsector Aurelia. We're not even going to bother with it anymore. At which point, the Captain Angelos comes back into the fray and goes, yeah, no, we're not doing that. Like, there's no, absolutely not, no. And he goes and confronts the leader of the Honor Guard, a guy named Diomedes. And the two of them have a bit of an argument that results in Diomedes declaring Angelos and then the characters you control in the game, the Blood Ravens, traitors, and he'd be killed on
site.
Yeah. But while that's all happening, the other squad goes to confront Apothecary Galen because, again, really obvious this guy's corrupted. And when they get to him, yeah, he is. It's him and a bunch of heavily corrupted Space Marines.
They all have a death or chaos aura about them. Like, hey man, how long have the guys been with the giant ring of evil light around them?
I want to point out, this guy is part of the Honor Guard that Diomedes is leading. So they go there, they kill him and all these guys. While killing him, though, Galen does it, because demons will do this. If you kill someone who's demon possessed, the demon will actually flee so it doesn't die. So as it leaves, Galen now gets back to being a regular Space Marine and tells them all this stuff about, like, oh yeah, Kyrus is totally corrupted. Just heads up on that one. And also thanks for saving me. And gives them some more information about the Judgment of Carrion. So Diomedes arrives and he's pissed because you just killed his apothecary, but you're able to show him, oh, hey, good news. Our chapter master is corrupted, but we killed that other guy who was.
I'm trying to show, in my mind, I wanted it to be different because of the fact that it's so obvious that they're corrupted that you could have just been like, here's the evidence. Open your eyes for 5 seconds. Yeah. You don't.
it's the Chael Sonnen comment about like Brock Lesnar failing a WADA test. It's like, hey, dude takes his t-shirt off, suspended 6 months. That's just how that works. No, we're done, man. You don't have to pee in any cups. I'm good. I have eyes. Thanks. So what happens next is they realize that the Black Legion are going to raise Ulquhar and they're going to free him. So they have to go do something about that because a great unclean one roaming around just isn't ideal. It's just in general, it's not ideal. So they do that. And I will say, as someone who plays the game of tabletop, killing a great unclean one sucks. It is genuinely hard. It is like Brad and I both, like the strategy, if you play tabletop 40K and someone brings a great unclean one, is to kill everything other than the great unclean one, because it's just not easy. That math sucks. But in the game, you get to do it. So I've killed more great unclean ones in Dawn of War, than I have on tabletop. Because on the tabletop, I think I've ever killed 3.
Let's use fire dragons.
Yeah, I got lucky on one with, I don't know what army it was. It was one of my, who knows, it was probably orcs. It's almost always. Oh, no, it was guard. I got him with guard. That'll
work. Hits, hell of a drug.
Yeah, guard will do some, guard can party. But anyway, so they don't really kill, they re-banish Ulquhar. They mess up Black Legion and everything is right, except for the fact that they are traitors to their own chapter and they have to run away before the other blood ravens hunt them down and kill them. And so it's a bit weird. Anyway, so now that concludes Dawn of War 2, Chaos Rising. And we wait one more year of our lives and we get to Dawn of War 2, Retribution, which is actually set 10 years later and wraps up. It was going to wrap up the storyline of the Blood Ravens, and then, you know, more 40K editions came out, so we got more. So this is set 10 years. This one gets a little bit good. Is the song Time Warp? Is that how it is? The jump to the left and then to the right? Is that Time Warp?
Yeah. The wild thing about this is it's a tough 10 years, by the way, because apparently things went bananas in the sector.
Yeah. So in the 10 years since, unfortunately, the Space Marines did have to leave the sector. So Ulquhar couldn't be brought back, but chaos is still rampant. You've got Tyranids are still floating around. You've got orcs sense the fight. They showed up. The sector's a giant mess. And the loyal Blood Ravens they're actually still in the sector, but they're almost like guerrilla warfare fighting against chaos and orcs and Tyranids while trying to not be found by the Blood Ravens, who they're part of. It's a whole big mess. But what they discover, it's about 10 years after, they learn that Kyrus is returning to Aurelia. And they realize this is their chance to kill him and save their chapter. So they deploy this like sudden assault on Typhon to confront him, only to be immediately counterattacked by the Eldar. And once again, so they get there. The Eldar are performing a strange ritual when they get there. Attack them. And again, I want to point out, every freaking time, when I say freaking time, I'm not talking like a 40K lore and in books. I'm saying in the Dawn of War series, every single time the Eldar are performing a ritual, let them perform it. It's almost always good for you, but they never do. They never even ask, hey, man, what you doing? Every time it's shoot them. And then afterwards go, oh yeah, that ritual would have been kind of cool and helpful. So they attack the Eldar. It turns out the whole reason the Eldar were doing this was actually to stop this giant fleet coming in. Yeah. So Kyrus had a plan. Kyrus actually was never where he was supposed to be. Kyrus pretended he was there so that these Blood Raven, like we call them the loyalists, would show up, find the Eldar and kill the Eldar and stop the Eldar ritual. Why? Because the second the ritual stops, the Inquisition arrives and blows up the planet.
I'm going to have to say that this is one of the few times, because I'm not a big Inquisition fan, but while they just did the right thing on these ones, because everything is corrupt around here.
Oh, yeah. The Inquisition, I guess, had been watching from afar and seeing, like, this entire subsector just fall apart.
It's just trash fire.
Yeah, and the Inquisition went, look, reclaiming this is just going to be way too much work, but we're not going to let the enemy have it, so exterminatus time. And they just arrive and start blowing planets up one by one. So the loyalists have to flee while they're exterminatusing down. The problem is that this is actually Kyrus's plan. Kyrus wants this. He pulled the Blood Ravens out of the system back in Dawn of War to Chaos Rising because he wanted the system to go to hell, which would invoke the wrath of the Inquisition, which would lead to an exterminatus. Because,
well, if you need to have a blood ritual and you need the death of millions, or sorry, billions,
yeah,
it's you could go around stabbing each one, or you could outsource it to somebody. They could just drop bombs and blow up an entire planet.
Yeah, let the Imperial Navy do it. They're good at it. So he built this giant base on a planet with monuments to the Chaos God. So as the Inquisition starts exterminatusing planets in the subsector, that death then feeds into this giant monument. And in the center of the monument is Kyrus, just feeding off this, like the Emperor on the Golden Throne. But, you know, but different. But not that different. And his goal here... He
does want to become a demon prince, so he's
trying to power up. Yeah, yeah. Captain Angelos learns that, and he's not about that. So the loyalist Blood Ravens decide to throw themselves at Kyrus and his base.
Well, now, poor Angelos, because he didn't wait long enough to get the Primaris treatment, which is way the better way to get this.
This story's funny because I get a huge kick out of this, because first off, Kyrus's base, by the way, because some of you might be wondering, well, wouldn't the Exterminatus just blow up Kyrus's base? No, because the Inquisition are also really stupid, because apparently Kyrus built his base on a world that the Blood Ravens had exterminatus in one of the prior games. So therefore, it's already been exterminatus. No reason to waste the munitions.
Or to take a look, because he's got...
Or even look at it.
Towering mountains to chaos.
Nope.
He's got these
Why look? Why even bother checking? Again, scanning in the 41st millennium.
You could have just had Ted look out the window and go, I can totally see giant skyscraper monuments to chaos.
Yep. Yep. That tracks. But anyway, so Captain Angelos goes down and he's mortally wounded by Kyrus. And to Brad's point, he's then rebuilt with bionics. You know, it's really weird.
So much suckier than Primaris treatment.
Well, I mean, not really, because Dawn of War 3 is badass as hell, but it's weird because the problem is, though, he's mortally wounded, but he's not Dreadnought mortally wounded. And to Brad's point, he's not literally the game was written before Primaris mortally wounded existed. So that happens. So he's like $1 million man RoboCop mortally wounded. That's right. But not Ed 209 RoboCop, actual RoboCop, but faster. So anyway, they do save him, though, and the other loyalist forces, while he's doing this, make it to Kyrus, and as he's turning into a demon prince, they slay him, because in the process of turning into a demon prince, you're at your weakest. Is this a plot for Space Marine 1? Yeah, it is. Just calling that one out. But then...
Angelos leads the most righteous campaign and most justifying...
Best part of the entirety of the Blood Ravens lore.
100%, because of the fact that you're like, hey, man, remember the time that we had a bunch? Also, no one intervenes in this, which is hilarious, because you basically went, did most of your chapter just go to chaos? Yeah, it just happens all the time. We're used to it by now.
Yeah, like they have a full-blown civil war. Angelos becomes chapter master. They have a mini civil war where they purge the Legion, like Istvan 3 style. A bunch of Blood Ravens, by the way, are now with Huron Blackheart. Like, that's where he got up. The Red Corsairs grabbed a lot of Blood Ravens out of this.
Yeah, so the off-season acquisitions were pretty good.
Pretty strong. Pretty strong recruiting pool that year. Yeah, a lot of 5 stars. But what I like about this, my favorite part about this is, like, so you have a chapter of Space Marines whose former chapter master, was an agent of chaos, actually ascended to be a demon prince. The Inquisition fully knows about this.
Yeah, because they're over there. They watched it happen.
Yeah, yeah, they watched it happen. And they were like, but you guys killed all the bad ones? All right, cool. No penitent crusade, no like permanent overseer from Ordo Malleus. Just, oh, you guys got this? Cool. So my thinking is this all happened and a bunch of people from the inner circle of Dark Angels heard about this and went, oh, what the? Come on.
You know what? I've been super pissed about this. Titus, who didn't do anything wrong, he got put in stasis for forever.
Okay. But just my point is the lion's going to read about this at some point and like, and just be mad. And just be like, so maybe we should tell someone about Caliban because it turns out it's not really our fault. And just love that we don't need to.
So you guys are all good now? Yeah, we're probably good. They went, that's all I needed to hear. See you later, guys. Yeah. You're like, yeah. What?
Good enough for me.
Like, I can't believe that worked.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was going to be the end of the Dawn of War series. But then 2017, if you want to know a lot more about this, check out our other show, The History of 40K. We talk about the 8th edition. So 2017, Warhammer 40K is in a rough spot. 7th edition is ruining the game, for lack of a better phrase. Actually, there's no better phrase. It was ruining the game. GW goes all in on 8th edition. Hardcore launch. They throw everything they have at it. And they need to really boost it again. And so they decide to go back to Relic Games, who I think at this point also are owned by Sega, and ask them, hey, we need a game. And so they release a game with 8th edition. Something they didn't do for 9th edition. 10th edition, we got it with Space Marine 2, and 11th edition, we're getting two games. So they've learned, do a game release, and it boosts it. But we get Dawn of War 3, which you can hear
your favorite.
Voice. Dawn of War 3, in my opinion, just give my opinion, great gameplay, exceptional graphics, wet noodle of a plot, which is why this next bit we have to do here, unfortunately, is all about the plot. I did enjoy playing it. I just didn't like the storyline. If you did enjoy playing it, you're not wrong. It was a fun game to play. But so let's get into it. Dawn of War 3 revolves around this mysterious planet called Acheron. The planet basically appears in the Materium for short periods every 5,000 years, and it disappears back into the warp. And that makes it full of mysteries. This is a D&D plot. I'm just going to call it what it is. Every faction wants it. The Eldar want it. Chaos want it. The Imperium wants it. I'm sure there's random Xeno factions that want it because there's all this stuff there. And an Eldar Autarch named Kairi learns.
Let me give you this part on this. Because this is one of my favorite things of setup. Because instead of saying that the Farseers are guiding and saying what we should do, they just dropped off on like, hey, man, this planet's going to be here. Do with this what you want to, Kairi. Because they give the Autarch this information and then just kind of go,
well, the thing was, is that with Kairi's obsessed with this planet because he knows this planet has the Spear of Kane on it. And the Kane is the Eldar God of War. And it's an incredible weapon that could actually be used to, in fact, reclaim the galaxy. Because Kairi's a little bit of a whack job is the situation. So he believes that he is the Storm Prince, which is the Eldar prophecy of the person destined to reunite the Eldar and save them. He's also, by the way, kidnapped the Farseer. Tal'Dir, who was in the Dark Crusade campaign, I guess when she died, she went into her spirit stone, and then he just stole that spirit stone, and he keeps her around and makes her tell him things. So he's weird. There's another detachment of Eldar there who are like with Kairi and could also look at him. Jane Zar is also in this game, which is cool. So they're watching him like, hey, you're a little bit nuts, but you are Autarch, so we're going to follow for now, but we do have Jane Zar here, so if we don't want to follow you, we have her. Yeah. So,
and just, since she just, will accidentally kill you in 8 seconds, but
continue. Yeah, just going away. But as is standard in the games, the Imperium forces, in this case, the Inquisition, opt for a holding pattern when this planet arrives, choosing to not get involved with this because the problem is the planet comes in, and as this new planet comes in, it's right next to Cyprus Ultima, which is a night world. And the night world is instantly attacked by the orcs because they just, it's orcs and the Eldar, and the night world's like, hey, help. And again, Inquisition's like, no, there's a warp planet here. We're just going to build a nice little defense. everyone stand in a line outside of this, because whatever's happening here, it's about to get a lot worse. Unfortunately, the Blood Ravens, you know, masters of planning and forethought and thinking through their decisions, go YOLO swag, no, and run down to the plant to go save the Night World, which they do.
You know what? I have to let everybody know on this one, because I made it a big point, because before we had this, to basically say that in telling this, we should talk about how the Blood Ravens are known for this. And then you went on a 5-minute straight diatribe of, it is never in the games, not even once.
It's actually the inverse. It's actually the inverse. In every chance in the game where they could show that the Blood Ravens are like almost stoic in their thinking and their planning. No, it's all YOLO swags over and over and over again. Like, it is like, it's just, it's nope. So anyway, they go in there, they save the Night House, but in doing so, they leave the blockade exposed and the Eldar attack and are able to actually then break through the blockade. And now Acheron warps in and they can get access to Acheron. So now we have to go deal with this planet of nightmares. All the factions go to Acheron, all for different reasons. Kairi goes there because he wants the spear. Gorguts is back. He apparently also wants the spear. No idea how.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Or how he knows about it, or what's going on, or whatever.
The other Eldar go there because they don't trust Kairi with the spear. Imperial forces go there because that's where the Eldar and the orcs went. They all get there. And then, spoiler alert, there's no spear. There's just a big trap.
It's a trap, too.
Inside the planet is a giant bloodthirster of Khorne. Like, massive one, too. And the Bloodthirster was one of the more powerful Bloodthirsters in the galaxy eons ago. And the Eldar, eons ago, sealed it in this planet and made it so this planet would warp in and out, go in and out of reality forever, so that this Bloodthirster could never escape. Good move, Eldar. Bad move, Kairi.
Let's talk about this. You have to be embarrassed right now for the Eldar because you just got outguiled by Khorne.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to believe it wasn't Khorne. I'm going to believe that it was Alpha Legion set this thing in motion because someone had been feeding information.
I was just saying, somebody's crafting a story about how the Spear of Khorne is right here, and you should definitely pull the lever, but only if you're Eldar. Because they want them to break the Eldar wards.
Someone at some point basically takes the locking mechanism and makes it look like a spear. So they do that. Kairi gets there. And the story in the game is kind of funny because Kairi and Gorguts both get there at the same time, and Kairi grabs it and tries to stab Gorguts with the spear to claim it for himself. And as it does, it shatters a spear, which then shatters a seal, which then frees the Bloodthirster. And the entire planet is now demons. Yes. Just lots and lots and lots of demons. And so now we get something that's very end of 7th edition, early 8th edition. So, allies. All right.
You're welcome.
In the lore, it's fine. Additional tabletop. Good God, this sucked. So, the orcs, the Eldar, and the Space Marines are counterattacked by Khorne. Just nonstop Khorne. And so Farseer Maka convinces Angelos that the only way to save anybody here is for him to take his battle barge and ram it into the fissure that's running through the entire planet, splitting the planet in half, which is because the planet itself is feeding this bloodthirster. And Angelos does that. And he actually, it's the whole scene. He flies the ship in. And just as it's crashing in, the Farseer teleports him to safety. Here's the fun thing about that, though. Just real fun note. You can't fly a battle barge solo. So in my mind, Angelos is up there like he's piloting it. But, you know, this isn't a dinghy, man. There's like probably a few thousand other crew doing it. And as it crashes in, one person gets teleported away and the rest of them are just like, oh, man, screw you.
All the named characters from Star Trek get teleported away. Yeah.
It's just a sea of red shirts. I mean, fine. They are Blood Ravens, so they probably were wearing red shirts. So they all die. So, and then the next bit, the cinematics are cool, but God, allies was brutal in the game. The orcs, Eldar, and Space Marines now come together to fight the weakened demon forces, and they use an Imperial Knight, a Wraith Knight, and looks a super Stompa. Cool.
And the Stompa looks awesome. Also looks badass.
The Knight looked awesome too. And they defeat the demon, and everyone goes their separate ways. And that's the end of the Dawn of War games for now. I hated that ending. I also didn't like that Captain Angelus looked like a cartoon. He was kind of running. There's a lot of aura around him. I did not like this game. But the lore is fine. That's your story. We now are going to get a fourth Dawn of War, because if people like something, GW will keep giving it to us. Unlike, the White Scars. So, just say, look, if you liked it, they give us more. That's all. All right, but 41st millennia. The events of Dawn of War 3, they happen. Angelos has declared they would rebuild. The problem is that they've taken exceptional losses. And once again, they go back to rebuild. And as they start to rebuild their chapter, the rift opens, right? Cadia falls, the rift opens, and the Astronomicon goes dark. And their timing is magical on this, by the way. It's because this only happens to the Blood Ravens. They've got like a ton of ships with aspirants who are all in the warp, who just, when this happens, go, and we're lost and we're all dead. So they lose like thousands, I guess, of potential aspirants. I don't know. This isn't a white dwarf. This happened kind of quick. At the same time, the entire sector goes to crap again. You've got mutants. You've got heretics. The librarians are getting visions of Ulkir again. The whole, demons are now there because, again, the rift is open.
The rift's open, yeah. So it's much, much easier for demonic incursion.
Yeah. So now the Blood Ravens are thrown back into action, and they are really barely hanging on. There is nothing. They're looking for anything that they can hold on to, something they can grab. And they reach out, and they find the golden banana that is the custodes.
I mean, if you're looking for some dudes that could do some heavy lifting, having a barge of custodes is pretty cool.
It does help. And they come in with they don't actually even bring Primaris Marines with them. They just brought Primaris Gene Seed.
Figure it out.
Here you go, guys. Jam this in some people. And they went, okay. Now, it did help because the Blood Ravens have lost a ton of Gene Seed, because all the losses they took were, like we talked about this before, like if your Space Marine dies and there's no apothecary who can just collect the Gene Seed and run away with it, it's just lost. And then you have to grow it really slowly. So if someone shows up with, I got enough to make 10,000 of them. That wouldn't be Codex compliant. I'm an Ultramarine fan. I got enough here for 1,000 of them.
Again, 1,000 in air quotes.
It's 1,000. Sure. These guys they're not Ultramarines. They don't get to break the Codex. There's no rules here. And so they're able to actually start rebuilding the chapter. Interesting thing, they also discover, by the way, Gilliman's alive. Those are the two things they do. They go, hell, here's Gene Seed to make Primaris Marines, part one. And then part two, by the way, Gilliman's alive again. Oh, good to know.
Yeah. Also, here's a new merit badge. You're part of the Indominus Crusade.
Yeah, we'll see you guys next week. But that's it. That gets us to kind of modern 40K Blood Ravens. But what I thought we'd do now to close this out before we get to kind of the next bit is talk a little bit about the Blood Ravens and where they might come from. There's a lot of theories on them. Some of them are stupid, but well, people are like, oh, they're Blood Angels successors. Why? Because they have the word blood in the title? What's wrong with you? No.
They're a bunch of psychers. They're probably Thousand Sons. Let's be honest.
There's a theory on Thousand Sons. There's a reference there.
There's a bunch of other cooler ones, but when you just have an entire, a ton of librarians
Let's jump into this. It is pretty, I would say, not clear, but I think most of us believe the Blood Ravens come from a fallen chapter, either one of the true traitor chapters, or I think they're from one of the two lost chapters. That's what I think they are. I think they're from one of the two redacted.
I think that's cooler, but I still think that they're probably, for me, I have the
more, a Thousand Sons spinoff.
I just think they're a thought. It makes more sense the way that they're psychers. They're so heavily psychers. They're very gifted. It just feels like it makes more sense if Thousand Sons weren't corrupted with Magnus, this makes sense to what they were.
That's the only reason why I disagree with you on that one is the corruption piece, because all Thousand Sons became corrupted when Magnus gave himself over to Tzeentch. So them avoiding the corruption throws me off. That's why I think they're one of the Lost Legions. And to be honest, it's the same reason I think the Carcharodons are as well. I think and I would love, again, by the way, I'm making this up, guys, and I could be totally wrong. I want GW to do this. I want GW to come out and say, Carcharodons, Minotaurs, some of these ones, they actually have their origins in one of the Lost Legions. And because it opens up so much we can do, and it allows for these legions to exist without any kind of association with a Primarch. So they can actually be a lot more stuff. So that's my theory on these guys, is that I think they're from one of the Lost Legions, and that one of those Lost Legions, it became a Lost Legion. They were too psychically powerful, and the Emperor went, nah, I'm snuffing him out. Like, nope. But you also couldn't bring them into, meld them into the Ultramarines, because we also know that most of the Lost Legions were folded into the Ultramarines and actually the Imperial Fists a little bit hard, but those guys didn't love psychers, and you're like, oh yeah, every time we put one of their gene seeds in someone, they become something you don't want.
Also, to the people, I love fan creations and stuff like that, and researching mm-hmm. what you're going to do today, I have a couple of the pictures and whatnot that I love. They have the Lost Primarch wanted Blood Ravens.
Yes.
Our Primarch. The people that created those are fantastic.
Oh, those are great. Yeah. And the Blood Ravens are great. But yeah, so that's just a little bit of John and Brad theory. If you guys have your own, jump into the Discord. Let us know. We'll debate it. I'm not firm on my thought process here. If you can give me better evidence or a better argument, I'll change my mind. I'm not that firm. But next week, we're going to do something wild. Originally, we were going to do one thing.
Very excited about this.
And then UPS found my package, stupid snowstorm. 500 Worlds got delivered yesterday. So I started reading it, and we're going to do a cast on the 500 Worlds. Because
it's so wrong. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. But meh, it'll be fine. But yeah, so next week, to be fair, you give me an opportunity to do more Ultramarine lore. I'm going to do more Ultramarine lore. I'm kidding,
true
everybody.
Story.
But for those of you who are getting sick of the Space Marine coverage, we will do Xenos afterwards. But real quick, we're coming into the 500 Worlds. It's coming up. It's coming hot and heavy. And I'm 90% that crap sold out again. And so, unlike Black Library, I'm happy to spoil the crap out of these books for you all. So, yeah. Because people like reading Black Library. This stuff, it's a pamphlet and three other... I'm looking at it right now. It's a pamphlet and three other things. All right. Till then, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.